This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Welcome back to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com, live here inside. Well, it might look like I'm in the Michigan Stadium press box. I'll be there in spirit coming up on Saturday for those of you following us on the video stream. But I'm actually in my home office, joined, of course, by the MGO Blog Roundtable. Ira, too. Ira's in the Emden studios on the ones and twos, but the MGO Blog Roundtable every Thursday at the 9 o'clock hour. They join me, the crew, starting off first with Mr. Brian Cook, the man who started it all over at MGO Blog. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well.
That is good to hear and see, my friend. Good to hear and see. Of course. Of course, your right-hand man, Seth Fisher. Seth, how you doing?
I'd like to start off with a play I like to call, "Hey, Donovan, look at this."
Exactly what I thought, too. And then, of course, what Mr. Craig Ross, he needs really no introduction. Craig has his own fan club that he ignores on Twitter. Yeah. You might see on his byline, if you're joining us on the video stream, it's Craig Ross. Everyone else has a Twitter tagline or byline. Craig does not. He needs Twitter. So I continue to say and suggest we need a Craig Ross Twitter fan page. Do we not?
No, I would say if people want to get in touch with me, they can call me. I actually have people who listen to your show call me now and again, so I'm not hard to find. So anyone wants to yell at me and tell me I'm adult or something else, call me. I consider myself, Seth is Brian's right-hand man. I consider myself Brian's second left foot. Just a carbuncle to get in his under his skin or something.
Just to clarify, Brian has two right hands because I don't want to take anything away from Ace, who is also his right hand man.
There you go.
You have to. All right, so guys, Michigan, they go out and they own Minnesota in one of the better offensive debuts I know I've seen. And just starting with you, Brian, how did that stack up to your expectations of Michigan and of Joe Milton heading into that contest?
Well, in one sense, it was on expectations. They kind of had the training wheels on. But Joe Milton's ability to run, I think, really stood out as something that hit the maximum expectation level. And then the organization level of the offensive line, I think there was one missed line call / blitz pickup in the game, and that was the last snap before the kneel. There was an earlier TFL, but I think that was just them timing up the snap real well. And to see Michigan replace four NFL offensive linemen and not really seem to have much of a step back is something that you always hope for in the offseason, but you never expect.
Seth?
Oh, man, I loved it. It's hard not to get too excited. First of all, you know, everyone saw Ben Mason be part of the offense. And not just Ben Mason. There was like a lot of Harbaugh 2015 kind of stuff and trap, and there's a – you know, just a straight up pull, right? Or like the one thing I didn't do was the stuff they were doing last year. So if you watched Michigan's tape last year and you're like, okay, I'm going to prepare for pin and pull, right? And I'm going to prepare for the arc read. All they did was run stuff off of those and not even those. It was a beautiful game plan.
Craig?
Yeah, for me, you know, the interesting thing was Matt Leinart becoming the Oracle of Delphi, because if you listen to the pregame show, he said these programs are moving in opposite directions. And I assume he meant, you know, Michigan was tanking and Minnesota was going up. But in fact, it seems like it was something else. The other thing I really liked about this is this reminded me Gattis's game plan reminded me a lot of Shostakovich's 10th Symphony. Russian composers in the day, Russian composers used to code their initials into their symphonies, or they would code stuff in their symphonies. And the 9th Symphony was more or less banned in Russia because By this point in time, Stalin was becoming very much an anti-Semite and doing his own little pogroms. And Shostakovich and his Ninth Symphony was banned. And then his Tenth Symphony, which was published the day Stalin died, I think, or within a day or two of his death, is coded for a lot of anti-Stalin stuff. Well, Gaddis's first play is a little flick out to Corum, and Corum, who's a freshman and hasn't, starting on the very first play, looks like he's shot out of a cannon, Speed and Space. And then his second play is a pin and pull, I think, actually, pin and pull keeper with Milton. And I said, this is sort of a different thing because Milton looked like a very willing ball carrier as opposed to the past. So those first two plays to me were Shostakovich's Tenth Symphony. I was cheering, until the series
who's,
tanked.
Who's Stalin in this metaphor? Who has just died?
And Stalin, well, I don't know. I'll have to think of that one, Brian. Okay. You can give me some help on completing the circle. But Gaddis to Shostakovich was definitely the deal here.
Yeah, guys, I was, you know, I look at, first of all, Joe Milton and his, you know, the poise that he showed, the reads, the touch, all of those things very consistent with what we heard out of practice. Now, he had a running game, a really good running game to lean on to help with that comfort. But I guess the overriding theme to me was sort of an offensive, and I've been saying the phrase dialed in, to really be focused on the strengths of all of these different guys. The way that they used Ben Mason was, I think you gotta marvel at it, because we saw Ben Mason doing a lot of things that we saw Sean McCune and Nick Eubanks do in a role last year, like that line route, that naked line route that he ran and scored a touchdown on. We saw last year them running with tight ends. We saw, and then in the run game, I thought we saw some definitely that they ran some power stuff, so that they scored up on the Zach Charbonnet play. But the thing that was a little more kind of grabbing from last year and kind of like a hidden way was those trap plays that they were running. I didn't see that. Felt like I saw that a lot last year. But they ran it in this game, and it just you saw them really take all the things that they learned last year about what guys could do effectively, and I thought they employed it perfectly in this game.
Yeah, sorry. The setup for the all touchdown he dropped was beautiful. They've been running those quarterback pin and pulls all day, and we haven't seen something that wide open, I think, possibly since Denard. And that's the same dynamic. I mean, Michigan can go empty with Joe Milton, and they can, on third and three, they can run it off tackle with him and expect to get the first down because he's big. He's able to take some hits, and he's an intelligent runner. Like, he's not like a lot of quarterbacks who are just trying to get it over with. Like, he's reading the blocks in front of him and doing the right thing. So I think you have a ton of upside there. And then as he progresses as a passer, he can lean on the fact that he's got a ton of fast guys around him. He can lean on his legs because Michigan didn't really ask him to do a whole lot of different things in the passing game, right? Like, most of the stuff he was hitting was either in the flat, or it was a screen, or it was that slant across the middle, or a quick post. And he's going to have to diversify that against better defenses. But he's got a great set of tools to have a real, like, five-tool offense.
And Brian, something I liked that you said in UFR was that his effect on the running game, because they were running the pin and pulls, changed how Minnesota was defending everything else. And that kind of opened things up, because even when he's not running the ball, even not necessarily throwing it, like on the Haskins long run, things are affected because of the threat of Milton running. And I thought Gaddis did a good job of having that in the game plan, and also having Ben Mason, like the threat of him, kind of affect the defense too. That big long run by Charbonnet, now that's a bust, right? Whenever you have a guy running 70 yards with nobody touching him, that's
because
two guys are outside.
Yeah.
But like one
in
of the
a
reasons,
straight line, yeah.
Yeah. But one of the reasons I think that the Mike missed the call, because they're supposed to slant and he's supposed to come back around. The one of the reasons the middle linebacker didn't come back, I think, is because he saw Ben Mason coming across the formation. And if you've watched Michigan's tape, you think, okay, they're bringing Ben Mason across. They're going to run split zone to that side, which means he's going to bash somebody and I'm going to have to be there because there's going to be a huge gap. And when he doesn't come that way, the Mike gets buried in there, doesn't even see where he is. And I think that was part of what opened up one of many reasons that Minnesota busted that play so bad.
You had some on that play, and it's been talked. We talked about it earlier this week. Man, you had some receivers blocking on that play in an impressive way, and maybe a way that not many anticipate when you consider the guys who made the blocks to spring the long run. Maybe not to get them through the line, but to make it a 70-yard touchdown. And you got Giles Jackson and Roman Wilson making the blocks that spring that, and that wasn't the only time on the day that they did that.
Well, you have Bell absolutely cutting the living daylights out of someone on Henning's screen. He was able to do that last year. I think that's one of his best assets as a player. And then, you know, you have Bell with the ball in his hands, and Sanders still gets a guy, and he breaks a tackle for 30 yards. Like, the number of different things you can do with Michigan's receiver core is large, and I think Michigan's going to benefit from the fact they have a diverse and very, very fast set of guys.
Greg Ross?
Yeah, I mean, the nice part of the game was, at least for me, I went into it, and I think many people went into it saying, okay, we have two questions on offense. We have a lot of nice tools and gadgets to play with here, but do we really have a quarterback and do we really have an offensive line? And I think to some degree, both those questions were answered. Yeah, we really do have a quarterback. And yeah, we really do have an offensive line. Even late in the game when Zach Zinter came in, I think he had two or three plays. They were two or three pretty good plays. And Vestardis, I think killed it. And I was glad to see on Brian's UFR, Vestardis graded out, I think, very highly on Brian's work. So those questions were answered. I guess I have questions for you guys. I mean, one is split zone. I mean, is that coming back this week? Michigan used a lot of split zone and arc zone last year, what Brian, I think, calls arc zone or Seth. And, is that sort of coming back in this offense? Because this week it seemed like it was mostly, pin and pull and power, actually.
I think that was the beauty. I counted maybe 9-10 plays they ran the whole game. And so it's like you didn't show much offense. Of course, it's coming back. We're going to see Ben Mason leading. I don't know if it's this game. I'm just saying it's in the arsenal. We saw Michigan kind of shift in the second half of the season from game to game. We would see different kind of run game strategies, especially manifest. And you can't tell me it's not in the arsenal, having Ben Mason coming around leading Joe Milton on one of those bluff runs. It's coming. They just didn't have to show it in this game.
The other question I've got for all of you guys is Minnesota defense just terrible? I mean, one of the things we said last week, or I said, you know, they weren't that great last year. They lost 6 or 7 starters. I mean, I'm not sure that this is a particularly good defense. I mean, offense, yes, I think they were a good offense, and we'll talk about that, I guess. But is there some fool's gold in this game, perhaps?
Yeah, I think anytime that you put 49 points on an opposition team and you missed 3 field goals and you had so many short fields that you're going to look a little bit better than you actually played. Mm-hmm. And Minnesota wasn't really able to force Michigan to do anything else. As Sam mentioned, they ran a very limited set of plays because Minnesota couldn't deal with those. So I think it'll get tougher down the road, and Michigan will have some bumps. But even think about how the offense felt versus how it felt like, say, in the Army game last year, where everything's a slog. You're getting 3 yards of carry out of Zach Charbonnet. There's no wide open guy downfield who drops the ball because there's no wide open guys. And just how everything fit together in this offense and how Minnesota was chasing ghosts for much of the game. And that's a change that happened in the middle of last season, most notably.
Ooh, we got some lag there to get to his part of his point about the limited plays. I mean, one of the things that one of the sequences that stood out to me was the, you know, they run a trap with, I believe it was Chris Evans that play, and they can't, they come back and they, the very next play, they run the same play. So it's like, you know, when you can do that and they scored a touchdown. So like when you can do that, it's like, dude, these guys cannot freaking stop you. Some of it is they aren't very good, Craig, to your point. But yeah, you pointed out something earlier, Seth. I mean, I do think that there is a way to really accentuate, to make them look that much worse, to really show a plan and building off of earlier plays. And that Eric All play was maybe the most vivid and vibrant example, the drop play, yeah, of what guys are talking about, because they had hit on that QB pin and pull, and it completely changed the posture of the defense, especially that safety. That safety was the one who got caught like, oh, shoot, here comes Joe Milton again, and he comes buzzing upfield. And I had to go back and watch it again. It's like he doesn't see Eric All running right in front of him. I mean, he's like in his face. He's right there. You don't see that guy right in front of him? And he runs right by him. But that's because they had run, they had hit that pin and pull, and they hit it for a nice gainer. And that dude was, he was hauling ass to stop Joe Milton on that play. And it's like, that is built that, and they knew it was going to be a touchdown. That's the other thing. You could tell they knew they were going to score that play if he just catches the football. Man, it was coherent. It was, this is how it's supposed to look. That's how it felt to me, to your point, Brian, before you got cut off. I want you to pick up where you left off. That's how it felt like, man, you can really see this plan over the course of the game, really building to, you know, building with time as the game progressed.
Yeah. And so, I think 8 of Milton's throws were either screens or those little dumps in the flat to All or Mason, and those gained 15 yards of play. So you're really able to create a lot of offense out of plays that are very simple to execute, and that speaks, one, to Minnesota's defense, but also to the fact that your game plan was very good.
So what do you guys – so what about the defense, guys? I mean, take me to that side of the ball. What did you like? What are you concerned about, if anything?
Well, the two things that jumped out as positives were the defensive ends and Jamon Green. So the Hutchinson, we've talked about him before. He absolutely looks like an All-American. He's Michigan's best defensive tackle. He's also Michigan's best defensive end. And Quiddy Pay is able to hulk up late in the game and show that he's really developed his pass rush moves. So that's unambiguously positive. And then I think Jamon Green was always in position. He kind of gave up the long one. I thought that was OPI. But you know, it says something when it's late in the game and everybody knows that it's going to Bateman and he's in the slot and you put Jamon Green on him and he wins. Like that fade they tried to him, there was no window for that fade. So the most important thing as a cornerback is being in the right spot when the ball gets there and we can work on everything else. And he was in the right spot.
Seth?
You know, the question when you play Minnesota is how are you going to deal with that RPO game? And I thought Brown's response to it was brilliant. He was moving guys in and out of the box so that Minnesota could never get a clean read. And I wrote about how, like, you know, for 40 seconds, Minnesota's just trying to call something else. And then they have to change their play because Brown changed the look on him again. And they got to change the play. And in the whole process, they forget about the fact that if they move these guys over here, you have two tight ends over here and then Green playing safety up on the top of that side doesn't have any pass to worry about on his side. And he can come up and now Michigan's one man against the run again. I thought that it was brilliant. I thought that they knew exactly what Minnesota was going to do, and he had a great plan for how to attack it. And some of the things that went wrong were, you know, the things that Minnesota is going to get you with, right? Like their running back is legit. But they said, I'm going to leave the linebacker back and deal with it and hold him back to cover the pass and then let the front deal with the run. And first of all, that means that they trust their front, which is something I don't think they could have said last year. And they did. They held up. Now, Minnesota had some guys out, so maybe if they had their full line available, that wouldn't have gone as well. And also, Michigan tried a whole bunch of that 3-3-5 stack stuff again, and that just never works. I think it's just – that's a – I think that they're trying to still save some snaps for their defensive tackles by playing 3-3-5, and when they do, Michigan kind of gets gashed.
Yeah.
Greg?
Yeah, big picture. I think I mentioned this last week that I looked at Minnesota's four games against their best the best four teams on their schedule last year. That was Iowa, Wisconsin, Penn State, and Auburn. And if you look at those games, Tanner threw it over 67% and at 10.5 yards a pass. That's damn good against teams that are pretty good. Well, how did he do this game? Well, he wasn't terrible, but he was 18 of 31. That's 58% at 6.35 yards per pass. So Michigan outperformed all those teams, and all four of those teams had pretty good defenses last year. So that's good. And I think you have to take the Michigan defensive performance in the context of how good this Minnesota offense really is. I mean, they've got probably an NFL running back, maybe an NFL quarterback. I don't know. He'll certainly get a shot. And they definitely got an NFL wide receiver. And so, I think even with them reshuffling their offensive line some, I think it was still at least a good offensive line, certainly massive. And so, I'm not negative, but it did seem like we got edged quite a bit, especially to the right side of the Minnesota offense for whatever reason. We got beat on the edge on the right side a lot, not on the left side so much. And there were things to be bothered with, but I thought I agree that Jamon Green was a really pleasant surprise and played quite well, from what I could tell. But, you still worry about the defensive tackles and the defense against a really dynamic team. But overall, I think I was happy, satisfied with how the defense played.
Yeah, you look at a couple of things. Number one, coming out of practice, the talk was that they, as good a pressure team as they were last year, they feel like they're going to be better. I think that game one, a lot more to see, but I can see why they feel that way. I feel like they're going to, you got Velshoff showing up and Jeter showing up, and of course, Aiden and Quitty. I mean, they absolutely lived up to the hype. Seth's point, I felt like Tanner Morgan had got him out of sorts with the pressure. I don't know what he was on the sack fumble deal. I don't know what he was doing. I don't know why he didn't handle the ball on that play. And it struck me as a guy who they messed with his head a bit with all the movement, who they messed with his head a bit with the hitting. Now, to Craig's point, though, on the run defense, I said this to you guys last week. Michigan was running the football well in practice. Is that more about Michigan's offense being really good, or is it more about the defense needing work, or is it a combination of the two? Now, we got to give Minnesota credit. I think they're a good offense, too. But then there were some, even with the concessions about, hey, heavy RPO team, keep your linebackers back. Craig's right. There were some edge issues. And when they got hit, on that duo play. I'm like, man, all over again, man, just with a different guy. I know I wasn't the only one to feel that way.
Yeah, and in this case, a lot of the damage was because Dax Hill went out and Makari Page had to hold the edge against an NFL running back, something he has not done before. And he's a true freshman getting his first action, so you're going to have some hiccups. There were some hiccups. So I feel like if you're able to get Hill back, a lot of that does get fixed. The other thing that continues to happen is that Michigan doesn't have a nose tackle who's able to hold up against doubles. So that just has knock-on effects because now the defensive ends kind of feel like this is happening. They got to cover someone else's gap. You kind of get out of position, and then there's a lane. So I don't think that's going to necessarily change this season. You saw some promising blips, like Kemp had a really good play where he shot through a double and got into the backfield. But other than that, It was not quite last year because they were able to fight a little bit better, but it wasn't that much different.
Yeah, I think Hawkins, I don't know if you've done the defensive UFR on this part yet, but I thought Hawkins kind of missed a couple edges too, which was, not normal for him. Normally, that guy's been pretty good in the past. I think that he felt he was pushed in the back one time. I think he felt
he was
held one time.
He was,
And so, I mean, those
kind of
things are going to happen.
You look at that play and you're like, come on, man, you can't do the flag thing during the play. When that would have been a weak call. That would have been such a weak call. Can't do that.
Right. So, I mean, what he should have done is just get a little bit wider and held the edge and not tried to make a play. And I think afterwards that, you know, he was trying to get the call, but knew he screwed up on that one. But, you know, first game jitters and whatnot. Out of all the defenses that we've seen in their first game this year, Michigan seemed a lot more organized than most.
Gotcha. All right. We need to get a break in here. A lot more to get to on the roundtable. Again, of course, we're on WTKA, Sports Talk 1050 WTKA over the air, WTKA.com as well. You can listen to us on the stream, but you can also watch us on WTKA.com, on our YouTube channel, on the Michigan Insider YouTube channel, on Twitter, on Facebook Live. If you have questions, you can throw them in the comment section. We can get those in. Also, back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider, more MGO Blog Roundtable on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket. So on WTKA.com, the Michigan Insider YouTube channel, Facebook Live, and Twitter, we are on several video platforms, and a lot of the comments are coming through. I think that, which one? I think it was Brian who said no more 335. You have some co-signers in the comment section, Mr. Cook.
I think that was Seth, actually.
That was Seth.
Hey, you got some co-signers, Seth. Let's kind of extrapolate from this game. It is just one game, but I think we saw some very promising things in all phases except special teams. You know, special teams when it wasn't Michael Barrett doing something or Haskins doing something fantastic, right? A lot to be desired in some of the other instances. But looking ahead, does your outlook, is it different now? I mean, is your ceiling for this team different based on what you saw in game number one?
Yeah, and I think the main thing is that everybody from people on Twitter to Jim Harbaugh in the aftermath of that game were talking about how cool Joe Milton is. Not just in terms of, like, you know, he's out there and he's confident and he's doing the things he's been asked to do, but he's just cool. Like, he's 6'5" Fonzie, you know, he's just gets out there and you look at him and you're like, we can do something with this guy. Very reassuring type of gentleman.
Yeah. I think the poise, that part of it, the leadership, the command of the scheme and the team, those were the final selling points for Joe Milton being the quarterback. I mean, I think that they had seen the physical and mechanical improvements. But I think to get Harbaugh to think that, all right, this is the guy, because you know the intangible pieces that I'm talking about right now, you know Dylan McCaffrey has those. Dylan McCaffrey, from the, you know, command of the scheme and the team, the presence, that he that's kind of like bred into him coming in the door, right? So did Joe have that? And I think showing that in the offseason, they could really see it in practice, that, man, this guy, I mean, the guys on the team, they really rallied around him. He really has command of this offense. And you can kind of see just him be this sort of unflappable guy. He got a hard charging defense. You might be moving a football on him, but every now and then, Aiden Hutchinson, Quiddy Pay, they're bearing down on you. He's standing in the pocket delivering the pass. He gets hit. He gets up next play, you know? And so that kind of thing, I think, is really spoken to the team and certainly to the coaches.
Yeah. I mean, I have to admit, I was thinking, well, I don't know, this is a 4-4 team, a 5-3 team. Maybe Sam is right that this is just an exhibition season. And, or you said something like that, not exactly that. And, but now I'm thinking, you know, this team could go 7-0 and then get COVID and tie with Ohio State. We claim we got three guys, you know, our mascot, our backup kicker. They got COVID. We're not playing you guys. We're tied. We win. That's
like
my
Wisconsin
theory.
Did to duck Nebraska this week.
Yeah, they're ducking Nebraska. So, but yeah, seriously, I mean, I didn't know what we were getting out of Joe Milton. I didn't know what we were getting out of the offensive line. I mean, there was positive rumors, of course, but you always hear positive rumors or negative rumors. And, I was very, very pleased. And now I'm thinking, this is a plausible team. This is a team that has, on offense for sure has the parts that you could really, this team could do something. Defense, I'm still not sure.
So is this a team that doesn't eviscerate Michigan State?
Well, I mean, Rutgers came pretty close to eviscerating Michigan State. So,
and I haven't published the articles yet, but I've got all my scouting done on that. And I did the full scout. I did the full, like, watched every single play and basically UFR'd both the offense and defense of that game. And I'm happy to report that Rutgers is still very much Rutgers and does all the Rutgers things that Rutgers does. So I do not believe, except for maybe their defensive tackles, that this is a case of, you know, Rutgers all of a sudden hulked up and Michigan State just wasn't expecting it. They're bad, and they're especially bad on offense. And, yeah, guys, this is the other thing is Michigan State's not a quarters team anymore. They spent all game in a cover one with their free safety playing in the parking lot. So it's a new era at Michigan State.
You know, the interesting thing there to me was I agree with you, Seth. I watched the game twice, and I think that the Rutgers defensive tackles were excellent, especially the Turner kid.
Really?
And Mike Dwumfor had a good game, in my opinion. And he was much more under control than when we saw him in Ann Arbor. I mean, he was able to beat his guys, but didn't go crazy and shoot past the play. You know, Mike Dwumfor had a good game. And the other guy's an NFL player. I think his name is Turner or something like that. Mm-hmm. So they've got.
Have you seen this Turner against anyone except Michigan State?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, Michigan State, I don't think was quite as bad as the reviews. I mean, their run game was okay. They ran 39 times for 50 yards. I guess that's bad, especially against Rutgers. But but they did pass it some. I felt that Rocky Lombardi has improved a bit. I mean, last year it looked like he was throwing a cannonball when he went to throw it. You know, this year he doesn't look quite so labored throwing the ball. He has a couple of good wide receivers. They have an okay freshman running back. I mean, I don't think they're that terrible. And it would be a mistake for certain for Michigan to look past them. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad to hear that Seth thinks that Rutgers is the same old meatball Rutgers we've always
seen. I did give credit to the defensive tackles. And if you go back to my faux film on Rutgers last year, I was giving credit to the defensive tackles last year too. That guy's decent. Okay. That guy's legit. Yeah. Michigan State probably didn't scout them because that's what Rutgers does. Rutgers gets upfield with their defensive tackles like blitz balls. And I kind of disagree with you on Dwumfor. I thought he had a great game, but he had a great game in a very Mike Dwumfor style where he just shoots upfield all the time, regardless. And Michigan State is running pin and pull and trying to get the edge on those plays, which is like, we've seen pin and pull how often, right? We've seen how many times has Michigan run that play? And you know that, like, okay, sometimes if they don't set an edge, then you turn them and you go, like that's what happened against Illinois last year. Mm-hmm. But that's not what you're looking for. You're looking to kick that guy out and then run inside of him. And Michigan State, even when they kicked him out, they were trying to run outside of him. And then they bench Eliza Collins and run this freshman who only looked good because he got lucky into having like the two plays that Michigan State blocked well. And then one of the plays that they blocked well, he screws up. He actually runs outside of that pin and pull. I thought that Michigan State looked vastly worse coached than they did last year on offense. And I think that they've made a huge mistake with Jay Johnson. And I think because of COVID and because they had a COVID outbreak, so they actually got less practice time than other teams and the new staff and everything else that's going on, there's enough excuse to keep him around for a couple years where he might be just maybe the worst offensive coordinator we've ever watched.
I think that's a little bit hasty. I mean, Mick McCall was at Northwestern for 75 years until just recently, and that was terrible. I think, you know, you're not going to have him have seven turnovers, and right. Craig is right that Rocky Lombardi is much improved, but he was a guy who completed 46% of his passes last year, so he had to be much improved to even get to bad. But that offensive line is still their offensive line from last year and the year before. And It reminds me of the hole Michigan got stuck in for about 6 or 7 years where they just couldn't find enough guys to field a competent offensive line. And they're running a whoever out, like Dobbs isn't playing and he's like their big recruit. Like Allen's decent at center, but the guys around him.
He's not. Allen's terrible.
Right, Allen well, I guess is he's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, did Allen even play in that game?
Allen played, and there were times when I was like, oh my God, dude, are you trying to lose here? That's not even putting all the line calls on him. If you add like all their missed assignments onto him too, he was bad. And like, it's worse than they were last year. I've scouted this team every year and, you know, they've had some terrible offensive lines, progressively worse every year. And this is the worst I've seen yet.
So I'm curious about a couple of things. Number one, what was the deal with Elijah Collins? Number one. And then number two, I just think you know what Rocky Lombardi is, right? And Rocky Lombardi can't beat Rutgers. If Rocky Lombardi can't beat Rutgers, what is the use in playing him? I think Theo Day is the better talent. If you're going to lose getting your better guy, your better talent, your higher ceiling guy, some experience as far as I'm concerned.
I think that Rocky Lombardi is decent for what they're doing. They have to get the ball out of there right away, and he's better at that. They really got to stop the sight reads because they try to do that. Craig, I still call him that because of your book from years ago when you sat in with Chad Henne and whatnot. But Michigan State's running those like stuff out of the air raid offense to try to like just get the ball out of there quickly. And he and his receivers weren't on the same page. Other than that, Rocky Lombardi like saved a few plays by having good pocket presence. Plays where like I've seen Michigan quarterbacks take sacks a gazillion times. And you know, he's the guy I think you want in there. One, because he's gonna get the ball out quickly and he's cool and he's played pretty decently. And two, whoever's back there is gonna get killed. And Theo Day has, you know, a little bit of eligibility left where you can maybe plausibly build a new offensive line because Lombardi's going to be ruined. And probably by the end of this game, he was getting ruined.
Yeah, man. I'm trying to find some nervousness or trepidation about this game, and I'm having a hard time. I'm having a really, really, really hard time thinking this is going to be anything other than an absolute bloodletting. And if you're you know anything about Jim Harbaugh, if he's up 70, he's throwing up 70. This is not taking a knee. This is not we're working on the running attack. They are going to pile it on if they can. Now, that's if they can. But I just nothing I've heard from Michigan State or seen. I didn't watch the game in its entirety, just, you know, here and there. I think that this is a team whose identity has completely shifted. And you talked about defensively. I don't know that the Mel Tucker sort of vinegar that he's trying to spread over this thing is enough to bridge how wide a gap this is. This is just D'Antonio left the cupboard completely bare. I mean, he gutted that program on the way out. No amount of leaving Michigan out of the commentary is going to rile the guys up enough to bridge that gap, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was stunned watching their defense. I mean, they lost 8 guys who had a combined 262 starts, but I still expected to see some ability behind it. And outside of maybe Noah Harvey and Antoine Simmons and maybe Julian Barnett, I didn't see much on that defense at all that looked plausible. I mean, so you're right. When D'Antonio left, he didn't leave Mel Tucker with a lot, especially, well, maybe in the whole team, but the defense, I was surprised by how inert they were. Now, yeah,
Barnett was on special teams. He didn't even play. He didn't even start.
He didn't even play.
No, he wasn't even out there playing on defense. I think he played a couple snaps in special teams, and that was it.
So maybe he's hurt or something. I don't know, but you would assume he would be playing. You know, they did not look good. And unless Rutgers is a lot better than I thought, or unless Michigan State can somehow put together some sort of superhuman, you know, effort to just say, okay, you know, we're just going to be crazy in this game. It wouldn't surprise me to see them say, okay, we ain't punting. We're just going to run 4 plays and we're going to run every crazy thing we can think of. it wouldn't surprise me to see them come out and play that way and see, okay, what can happen out of this. They may lose by 70. That's true. But I'm not so sure. I have a hunch that this game may be a bit more competitive than
Craig.
People are thinking.
Craig,
I didn't say that they'd win. I said
that is you're leaning on past trauma. That's all that is. You got PTSD with Michigan State. This is a different dynamic than when D'Antonio took over, even when Saban took over. I mean, this is a program that, from a talent standpoint, we could see it in, Brian, we've talked about this in the past. You could see it in the recruiting trends the last couple of years of D'Antonio. I mean, they don't have the guys, is the point. The guys they had the years before, and he was very fortunate. I give him credit for being able to build up the talent on that roster, recruiting Ohio well, and then beating the early years of Rich Rodriguez, winning Michigan and winning it by a landslide. And they built up the talent in that program. But over the last 3-4 years, I mean, they start losing Ohio guys to Cincinnati. I mean,
Kentucky.
And Michigan guys to Kentucky. So the guys that were winning them those games aren't playing here anymore. You see Kentucky winning games. You see in Cincinnati winning games. Those guys played for Michigan State 5 years ago. They aren't playing for Michigan State right now. And that, to me, is the point. Like, you don't have the horses to get this done. It would take Michigan. For Michigan to lose this game, Michigan has to beat Michigan, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. Like,
yeah, they don't.
I mean, how are they going to move the ball if Michigan has a bust? How is Michigan going to get stopped? Well, if Michigan throws it into coverage or whatever. But the thing is, like, they kept that entire defensive staff, and then they changed the defense. Like, they used to have a system, and that system got poked holes in kind of later in D'Antonio's regime, but they were still able to make a functional linebacking core out of spare parts. And now they've changed it up entirely. And so you had an opportunity to have continuity on one side of the ball, and you threw it away so that Mel Tucker could implement his defense, which made Colorado worse last year. So I don't think that was a good choice.
Michael Lent, don't be over. First of all, I don't think fans' confidence has any impact on the game. I'm talking about responding to some of the YouTube comments. Michigan State is literally doo-doo on a stick. I had a whole piece about this the other day. They are a terrible football team that should question their worth on the field on Saturday. After you lose to Rutgers, do you really deserve to be on the field? Should you just take a pass the rest of the season? Who can you beat if you can't beat Rutgers? Why even play? Why play the game? There's no redeeming quality. You're just out there to have fun. You aren't out there to win. You're out there to pay for classes. That's it. Not to win if you can't beat Rutgers. You have no hope if you can't beat Rutgers, is my point. So you don't want me to be overconfident, Mike. Too late. Too late. that ship has sailed, man. It would take, and it's possible, an act of the football gods for Michigan not to win this game on Saturday.
Which we've never seen in this series before. That's not at all alarming.
Okay, it would take multiple acts of the football gods, multiple acts of the football gods for Michigan to lose this game, as far as I'm concerned. This should be a complete and utter destruction of a team that just is hapless right now.
I'm taking the points. That rant has convinced me to take the points, because they're not going to win this game, but the bad juju that Sam Webb just put on this game, I'm taking the points.
Hey, I take a look, man. I'm just telling you, you look at the offense. Tell me if you feel like this. In this day and age, and I asked you this question a couple of weeks ago, guys, talking about this day and age of college football, how do you win games? And it struck me hearing Nick Saban say, you don't win with defense in today's college football. Nick freaking Saban said that. You got to put points up on the board. You got to be able to score and score and score again. And we just watched Michigan go on 10 straight drives, 10 straight drives, where it was either a touchdown or a field goal. And it wasn't a fluke. I mean, the offense, we talked about the plan they had that was rolling. It's coherent. You got a quarterback that can execute. You got receivers that we didn't even see. Did we see A.J. Henning maybe but for 2 or 3 plays the whole game? I mean, there are elements to this that we haven't seen yet that we're going to see. that Michigan State, I mean, good luck. Good luck. There's so much that they didn't show last week, guys, that they could unleash on this team. I just, Michigan scores 50 in this game. Michigan scores 50 in this game. They score 50 in this game, guys.
I'm just always wary of
38. Rutgers, Craig, you need some help. Listen.
I'm wary. I'm just wary of a cornered dog.
Listen to me. Rutgers just scored 38 on Michigan State.
Seven turnovers.
Rutgers.
Eight, actually. One.
Rutgers had, what, four turnovers themselves? Three. Like, the turnover disparity was not crazy.
It was 7-3, actually eight. One got overturned by a penalty.
This Rutgers offense scored
a turnover.
They scored a grand total of 67 points on FBS teams last year. 67, this Rutgers offense. And they scored 38 on Michigan State. Come on.
You know, I do think Michigan State is in for a dead cat bounce. So they're gonna have their dead cat bounce. They're going to lose by 24. And then the Maryland-Michigan State game is for the bid to the Losers Bowl in the Big Ten.
That's right.
I'm going to watch that.
That's, I agree. I will be watching that because the loser of that game gets Illinois, probably, or maybe Wisconsin. If Wisconsin only plays one game, I don't know what happens then. If Wisconsin goes 1-0, do they play the ninth place game regardless? I have no idea.
No. Yeah. Bloodletting. Let's make it happen. Guys, fellas, this is an absolute blast. The roundtable is on another level. Folks, if you missed any of it, you can always check it out on our YouTube channel. Of course, we're going to be back this way next week. Always fun. Be sure to check the fellas out over on MGO blog. We'll be back tomorrow. 12 hours of Michigan football on our fantastic Friday. Lots of great guests, so be sure to tune in. That's going to do it for us on this edition of the Michigan Insider MGO blog roundtable. Thanks for listening. Sports Talk 1050, WTK, The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
Better than us!